This episode of DLC is brought to you by Alienware. So I've got a question for all the gamers out there. Are you seriously going to miss out on Alienware's biggest gaming sale of the year? I mean, these are Black Friday prices we're talking about, so it's not just another sale. I took a look, and this is some pretty big bang for your buck. You know, it's Alienware with some of the most advanced engineering out there, with systems at the top of reviewers' lists. And what about a gift for yourself? Gift yourself a new Alienware 16 Area 51 gaming laptop. I mean, this thing's got performance at the absolute next level with Intel Core Ultra processors. And even better, you can get it during Black Friday. Plus, you can save on all kinds of displays and accessories, like the Alienware 27 4K QD OLED gaming monitor for ultimate visual fidelity. These are incredible deals on PCs with otherworldly performance. So I'd visit Alienware.com/deals soon and grab what you can before their biggest sale of the year goes dark. Together, but we're going to try to help by being in your ear holes for 90 plus minutes of gaming goodness, because DLC is your downloadable commentary for the week, delivered the way we love it to be, and that is completely free thanks to our sponsors this week: Audible, Postmates, and Ritual. They're bringing the show to you. DLC, of course, the show all about games in their many forms, games played on desktops, laptops, and consoles, also games all about dice, luck, and cardboard. I'm your host, Jeff Cannata. That's spelled with two N's and one T. And I am joined, well, once again, returning champion, back, my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, the guy who's sporting a brand new haircut, Mr. Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hello, Jeff. Hello, everyone. Yes, I let my oldest daughter cut my hair. It was a long made-ago promise. And afterwards, I was like, did this go as you envisioned? Is this how you pictured it? And she's like, oh, I didn't picture it at all. And I was like, yeah.
Oh, step one, picture it.
Pretty clear.
Step one is the picturing it. Step two is the trying to get it close to the picture. If you have no picturing it, yeah. I don't know.
What are you going to do? First episode from the new spot. We have internet, so if it sounds a little different, it probably will. There's different sounds and stuff. And also, as of right now when we're recording, because of you all, we have raised over $1,000 for St. Jude. So hey, thank you so much.
Good job. Everyone
who's donated, and there's more. Fridays, Monster Hunter World. Saturdays, playing with friends. And I think I've thrown out the 30th for you, Tim, and I to get back.
Yeah, we had to reschedule because of your lack of internets, and I have yet to confirm the 30th, but I hope to be able to do that. I just have to check with the fam.
Cool.
And make sure that is all doable, but I hope to be able to make that work. So,
well, yeah, you heard it here on the podcast. He said it 100% works. So put it in the calendar, everybody, May 30th.
Hey, we got a lot to talk about this week. Video games galore. There's tons of announcements. So many people, I have to say, are emailing me specifically sad that there's no E3 bumper this year because there's no E3. So we may have to come up with some sort of hybrid E3 bumper, because we're already getting close to E3 type announcements. It's like the trickle three. I'm coining trickle three. So we got lots to talk about because that's already happening, and we have an awesome guest to do it with. You know, the DLC always stands for your downloadable Kanata and your downloadable Christian. But this week, I am so excited because once again, DLC stands for divisions, leagues, and championships. because we have Chief Marketing Officer of Out of the Park Developments, the makers of Out of the Park Baseball and Franchise Hockey Manager, our friend Rich Grisham is back with us. Hey, Rich.
What's happening? I am so happy to be here, as always. I say it every time, but I say it because I mean it. I love the show. I love the attitude, the purpose of the show. I love what you two guys do. I listen every week. It is always a pleasure. Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, thank you for being with us. That was so kind to say, and we love having you. This has been, I don't even know how many years of a relationship this has been, but I value every time you come on. So thank you for being here yet again.
My pleasure.
And let's dive in the way we always do with Story of the Week.
Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week. Story of the Week. It's the Story of the Week.
Story of the Week is the part of the show where we make our case for the most important stories that happened in the world of games this week. You can always submit stories for our consideration by sending us an email to dlcfeedback@gmail.com or by visiting our subreddit. That's 5x5dlc.reddit.com. There's lots of cool folks hanging out in the subreddit talking about the show, talking about video games, talking about our shared hobby in any which way. Urge you to give it a shot. Join the folks. But Rich, you are our guest. So you get first pick of stories. What would you consider to be your story of the week?
It's got to be the Xbox show, right? There's no other story of the week this week anyway. It was
the Xbox show. The Xbox show. It's Saturday night, and it's the Xbox show.
Yeah. Well, evidently, you say that, but Christian, but you know, evidently, we're going to get an Xbox show once a month for the summer. So it maybe it should have a theme song.
It's your once a month Xbox show. It's your once a month Xbox show. It's your once a month. You're going to get hyped up, and the news won't live up to your expectations. Show.
It is Inside Xbox. It was a Series X, Xbox Series X featured Inside Xbox. Really felt kind of like an E3 presentation with sort of wall-to-wall world premiere. That kind of feel
to it.
One more
time. One more time for us.
World premiere.
Ooh, nice.
But now they added the new thing, which is smart delivery. World exclusive. Smart delivery. Anyway.
Console launch window. Smart delivery. Timed exclusive period launch window.
Xbox Game Pass day one. You know.
Real gameplay rendered in engine with the computer that's not out yet. Delivery world.
Rich, you are right. This is a pretty big deal. What caught your eye on this? Did you watch it live? Are you into our new, you know, post E3 world where this is the kind of way we get? Because one would assume these all would have been part of a June presentation that would have been, you know, much longer, that now has been chopped up into these monthly installments. How do you feel about all that? And what do you think about what was shown?
So I am... I'm a fan of all three of the console makers. I'm a huge Nintendo fan. I am a huge Sony fan. I'm a huge Microsoft fan. I play all the systems.
Classic fanboy. Ugh.
Yes. I got to say a couple things. Did I watch it live? Yes, I did. I am completely, wildly all in with the delivery of information now. I love the... I never enjoyed... Well, I shouldn't say I never enjoyed it. I did not enjoy significant parts of the live, you know, they're not press conferences, the live presentations of the executives walking around and talking about things and awkward demos and bringing
the infomercials
things
that we've been getting. Yeah.
Like I've never liked that. So that's why when Nintendo started doing Nintendo Direct, it was such a revelation. And to me, it was like, wouldn't you do it this way every time? And so I am definitely on board with the, you know, the digital unveiling via live streaming and YouTube and various things. Like to me, there's no other way to do it. Not anymore, especially. But even before, you know, the pandemic, I was, you know, it's safer, it's smarter, it gives you the most flexibility and reduces the awkward level by 99%. Mm-hmm. Specific to this. It was just really dark and depressing, and I didn't come away from it feeling good at all.
It's interesting that you say that. I had the same feeling. it is so, I think we are in this really interesting paradigm shift where, at least I personally am, I won't speak for anybody else, but I certainly have experienced my own personal demarcation line where it seems, it's obvious that all of these projects that we saw debut and show trailers in this Inside Xbox were created months, if not years, before any kind of pandemic or lockdown or world-changing event.
Yes.
And so you kind of can't hold it against them for being in an old paradigm. But, you know, I watched the Jerry Seinfeld new stand-up special on Netflix as well that just came out this week. And he does this whole bit about like going out and how annoying it is to go out. You're like, you're going out. It's like, oh, I want to go out. All I want to do is go out. You know, and it's not his fault either, but it feels like they can't help but not read the room. You know, there's no way for them to retroactively read the room, but you kind of wish they could read the room, you know? I obviously there are plenty of gamers who are still down for the dark, brooding, real gamer games that have defined generations of software on all of these kind of major platforms, except for Nintendo. So from a marketing perspective, they still have to present these games, but I am so right there with you that it felt like back to back to back, just morose, dark worlds that I just right now can't imagine myself going into. And
may I throw out, so I agree that there was a lot of that, but there was also Assassin's Creed Valhalla.
Well,
there was
Yakuza
Like a Dragon, Madden, Dirt.
The games that didn't do that really popped for me, like Call of the Sea, you know? And I also think that's why the Switch is selling like hotcakes right now and people want to play Animal Crossing.
Yes.
It's just like, let me play something that actually makes me feel good about things.
Here's the thing. People want to experience happy things. They always have. The industry love, and I love this industry. I'm in it. It's my life. But our industry for years, and I've said this, I'm sure, on this show, right? So I'm not going to harp, but the industry has always insisted, whenever given the opportunity, to put its grossest foot forward. Hmm. And Animal Crossing is just the latest example of how there is a huge amount of people that want to experience happy things, especially now. But it's not just now. It's always been this way. And that's why I was, you know, and I'm not going to, it's not about this one presentation. It's about historically the dark, dreary, like it brings it into stark relief now, because all of a sudden things that were cool to play in a video game like The Division are now like, bah, this is happening outside my door. Right. But again, the juxtaposition of Animal Crossing, its amazing success right now compared to this presentation, really brought that into even more relief, you know, for me.
Yeah. And I wonder if there was any sense of that internally when they were putting this presentation together, because they clearly chose games to be featured here as opposed to the June or July offerings that we're going to see. So it did feel like back to back to back. Just, I mean, games like Scorn and Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines 2.
Oof, and, some of those and, were rough. Yeah,
and they may very well be excellent games. I don't mean to disparage the games themselves.
Absolutely. Agreed.
But totally. It did feel like a very dark, you know, rough series of experiences that they were trying to sell me. And I just kept going, I don't know. But Christian, it sounds like you disagree a little bit.
No, I mean, I think there were those heavier games, but I think there were, you know, others as well. Like I said, Assassin's Creed, Dirt 5, I think. Car games and new generations are, you know, peanut butter and jelly to me. I love it. Peanut butter and chocolate. Pick your thing you like peanut butter
pick
with.
Pick your banana. Thing that you put peanut butter
same here.
With. Yeah, your mouth. Like, it's, you know, and a spoon, whatever you want. And I thought, to me, yeah, there are some dark games, but oh, Yakuza Like a Dragon just seemed so fun and kind of really taking that franchise, a franchise I've dabbled in, but never, you know, certainly completed any of the games, but it seems like it's kind of leaning into its maybe Saints Row the Third moment, you know, kind of thing where it's taking things to a more fantastical realm. I'm curious about like something like Madden. Do they patch out the audience if people aren't allowed to go to games? Like, does that
make it authentic?
Yeah. Does that game still come out if the season gets pushed by 2 months? Like stuff like that, I find interesting. But you know, I agree that The Division, it feels a little heavy handed, but one of, I think, Jeff, you and I, our favorite games this year was Doom Eternal, and that game's not light, you know?
Oh, no, and that's why, and I'm with you there, and one of the games that I'm playing, right, is Doom, and so it's not that, this is not an anti that kind of a game thing, it's just aesthetically the theme for me, right, asked the question was, oof, that was, it would have been nice for a little bit of sunshine, a little more color, a little more something. But again, they showed what they had, right? They can't just be like, you know what? People are a little sad these days. Let's liven it up and invent five games, right? They had to work with what they had to work with. I get that. And Jeff, you mentioned that earlier. So
that's this month's, and next month's is Fable and Forza 5, you know, whatever. And ooh, stuff is paced together, right? And then July is Halo, and they have things thematically together. I will say that of these, the Medium, I think, is the game that I'm most interested of. Call of the Sea looked interesting, but the Medium seems like it could be right up my Control, Alan Wake, maybe even Fear, kind of like two worlds, what's going on, what's the story going to be. It looked pretty compelling.
It was another one that felt like it was going to be super heavy to get through, but it did look really cool. For me, the clear standout was Call of the Sea, as I already mentioned. Just that vibrant island that looks like you're genuinely exploring. I love the 1930s setting.
I love the 1930s period. End of sentence.
I do. As a fictional. Well, you know, as a real time period, but playing through a narrative in a fictional version of the 30s, you know, that's Indiana Jones, you know, that's like this kind of adventure. It feels like it's got some swashbuckle to it. And I'm always down for that. I think that game looks really compelling and interesting. Did you have a standout for you, Rich?
Well, I was interested the most in Madden when it popped, because obviously, sure, I love sports video games. I'm a fan of Madden. I'm in an online league right now with my friends. You know, it's mellow. It's not a big deal, but it's fun. And, you know, as a fan of the series, would I've loved to see a mind blowing trailer? Sure. But I also understand that the game looks really good right now. And I don't know what you would have to do, something along the lines of E3. What was it? 2005 or 2004, you know, when they had the big trailer that blew everybody's minds, that wound up being basically, CG. So
yeah,
it would have been cool.
Been MTV. I don't even think that was E3. I think that was like an Elijah Wood hosted MTV TRL.
You're probably right.
Madden, probably right. Something or other.
But I mean,
it's a weird dance that they have to do, because totally, they're having their own EA Live event in June. Yep. It just seems odd that they would even include Madden in this event, because it's like you kind of can't really come out guns blaring, because you want to save that for your coming out party. And we all know Madden's coming out. Mm-hmm. I just don't understand, like, what's the even point of include? I guess we had Patrick Mahomes, so let's put him in the thing. I don't know.
It's good to know that. It's good to know. It's a good confirmation. But yeah, like you say, everybody knows it's coming. So it would have been cool to see something more, but I completely understand why they show what they showed. So for every reason you just said, the Dirt 5 looks interesting. I have a tough relationship with Dirt. Those games are quite often very difficult, and I'm not good at most of them, but there have been a couple in that series that I have really liked a lot. So you would think maybe a launch racing game would be a little more friendly to the people who don't like to use the brakes as much. So we'll see.
I have a feeling we're going to get a Forza as well.
Of course. And I'm playing, you know, I didn't mention it and I won't, but other than this, I play Forza 7 all the time. The current version that they have, which is optimized for the Xbox One X as it is right now, is spectacular. So I'm sure Forza 8 will be will be everything that we're all hoping it'll be.
It was interesting to hear that right at the end of the Dirt 5 interview that they're going to offer two modes on Series X, the 4K 60 frames per second mode and a 120 frames per second mode. So this might be the first game. Who knows? There may be others at launch, but this might be the first game that you can play on a console that will run at 120 frames per second.
Nice.
Which sounds kind of rad. I'm sure it will be at 1080p, but still, that sounds pretty great. That sounds pretty cool to put on your big fancy, you know, HD television. I want to keep digging into this a little bit because it is a big story. We have other things to talk about too, but because we have you here, Rich, I want to talk a little bit more about Madden, not just what they showed, but sort of the state of the world right now. And, mm-hmm. you know, you clearly are making, as you said, games about sports that aren't being played right now.
Yes.
And I wonder what your perspective is on that. You know, Christian raised some ideas about, you know, will they reflect the real world or will it be a fantasy of a time when when things were a little more quote unquote normal? What is your company doing? What would you like to see EA do? What's your take on that?
So my company makes two licensed sports games. One of them is Out of the Park Baseball, licensed by Major League Baseball. One of them is Franchise Hockey Manager, licensed by the NHL. So we are great partners with those two organizations. And we are betwixt and between. With our baseball game, it was a pretty wild ride the last few weeks from release. Our game was scheduled to be released on March 20th, and it was released on March 20th. And the pandemic really started wreaking havoc in the United States as far as impacting things about a week and a half before that, when the Rudy Gobert situation happened, and then like dominoes, all of the sports stopped and were canceled. And so we sort of were timing-wise, it sounds strange to say it, but we were fortunate timing-wise in that our game was virtually done. Not completely done, but virtually done. And they had been playing spring training for several weeks, and we had data and information. So for our release, we were able to have the proposed 2020 rosters and schedule and configuration. And that's how it remains right now. We have the ability to, in the game, change the configuration of the season and the divisions and the structures and the schedule. So if and when baseball gets a new plan officially in place and executes it, we're going to deliver that to our fans. So that's sort of that's our immediate situation.
So let's say, you know, some of the weird plans that have been floated around are like, you know, double headers every day, uh-huh. and 7-inning games and all that.
Yep.
Your game would be patched to reflect that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes. And our hockey game, you know, is scheduled to come out, the next one, in October, when the NHL season normally kicks off. It's in deep development. Mm-hmm. Does anybody in the world know when hockey will start and then when it will finish and then when the next season will start and finish and what's going to happen to all the players? No. So we're in limbo. But we have a great relationship with the NHL, and we anticipate being able to either update our existing game with whatever the new playoffs come out as and locations, and or, you know, deliver the next game with whatever the plan is then. So, yeah. You know, that's what we're doing.
There's an argument to be made that video game versions of sports are more relevant now. You know, it's people would be more inclined to want to escape into them and play the games that they love because they can't watch professionals doing them on television.
Sure. And we've seen evidence that that's a fact. And we've also been more cited this year in media outlets. You know, The Athletic is doing a 30-team online league where all 30 of the beat writers for the major league clubs are now in an online league with each of their respective teams, and they're playing it out and they're reporting on it in The Athletic, Baseball Reference, you know, the Bible of baseball, is simulating the 2020 season and putting the stats out there as if the season were being played using our game. Cool. You know, the MLB, we just last week completed the dream bracket on the MLB.com, you know, banner. They ran it. The MLB Network put it on the MLB Network using our game and MLB Network broadcasters. It was surreal.
That's cool. I mean, that's what you want, right? You want a deep simulation when all you can do is simulate games.
Well, some people do, right? Some people do. And you know, but also, you know, the no matter what sort of short-term potential bump and exposure there is, the real game feeds our game, real baseball, moving forward, actual games, actual statistics, both literally in that the data, we have live data in our game that drives several modes. And also figuratively, right? Like if baseball or hockey or basketball or football isn't played at length for another half season or season, like that's going to have the kind of implications, you know, in our little slice of the world, you know, it's major in the bigger picture to the millions of people that are dependent upon it for their incomes and livelihood. It's exponentially bigger, right? I'm not trying to position ourselves in one way or the other. You know, I'll just say it's incredibly. There's so much uncertainty. You hear the word all the time, but there's just so much uncertainty because we just don't know what's going to happen. And so what I would like to see EA do, I mean, I think it behooves them to execute their plan. I mean, that's what we did. We didn't change really any marketing we didn't change at all. It didn't change any of our marketing plans, any of our delivery schedules, any of our, you know, we were fortunate in that our delivery schedule was not changed with that, you know, by somebody else that we didn't control. You know, there's a lot of third parties that we depend upon for key aspects of our operations, you know, e-commerce and internet infrastructure and stuff that, you know, if they went offline, we wouldn't have been able to deliver the game. So I think the only thing that you really can do is to live in the world that we're in the world of video games, which is a fantasy land, fantasy world. Madden should come out this year with the schedules and the games and the ability to play it as if this thing weren't happening. Should they have other aspects of the game to reflect it? Like, you know, Christian, you may or may not have been joking, but you should be able to patch out the fans. That's a legitimate question.
I wasn't joking. I mean, it's in the game. It's in the game. I think that's whatever happens for the season, Madden is the type of game that should reflect that actual reality.
Totally agree. Right. And we have the same question. Are we going to have in our next version of the game, are we going to have a toggle on or off to have fans in the game? I don't know. Maybe not. Do we want to? Should we? I mean, those are questions that are not just, you know, you shouldn't just brush them off. You should talk to your community about them. Ultimately, these are interesting, unprecedented kinds of questions that everyone in the sports and sports game industry specifically is asking ourselves.
You guys are intensely investigating all of the minor league parks in Arizona right now to find out that's where all the games are going to be played potentially.
Between that and the Florida parks, we're going to get all the dimensions going to plug in. But actually, we already, the modders in our community, because we have a ballpark builder, so the modders already have all of them already. So
crazy.
Our community takes care of stuff like that. They're amazing.
Fascinating. And I, you know, it is uncharted territory. And there's no right answers here, but it is an interesting, we're all finding out in real time how it all plays out. And I find it fascinating. I appreciate your insights.
Sure.
We can't move off from this story though, without talking a little deeper also about Assassin's Creed Valhalla, which I think really was the big game of this first Inside Xbox. And I certainly saw a lot of, discontent in my Twitter feed from people that expected to see more quote unquote gameplay in a gameplay reveal of Assassin's Creed Valhalla. I personally wasn't perturbed by that. I know how that game is going to play. You know, there's no mystery as to how it's going to play, but I just am over the moon for this project. As I've said numerous times now, I'm nobody's more shocked than me that I'm so in love with this franchise. But post Odyssey, I am chomping at the bit for more Assassin's Creed in a new milieu. And this seems like they are taking on Vikings in such an interesting way, and not really just doing the cliche of Vikings. It's not just the Skyrim Assassin's Creed. It really does feel like they're looking at it from a historical perspective and trying to give some nuance and some different shades to that time period. And the game looks awesome. The ability to dual wield any weapon in the game, and all the raiding stuff that we've heard about. Christian, I may regret saying this because you weren't here last week, but I'm going to say it. I think if somebody told me I could only have this or Cyberpunk, I might have to choose this because, and I'll explain why real quick.
Nope, you don't. Okay, moving on. Rich.
It feels like for me, the known quantity that at this point, the fact that it is the team that did Odyssey.
The team that did Origins,
but building on the what is laid down in Odyssey, and Origins was awesome too. I feel like it is more a sure bet that I'm going to love it. Although they did say they've overhauled all the systems, but I feel like it's more a sure bet that I'm going to love it.
It just means Chip Foose took the rearview mirrors off. That's all that ever happens on Overhaul. Two tone paint job and no rearview mirrors. Go ahead.
Did not follow that. But Cyberpunk, while I have a lot of faith in CD Projekt Red, feels like a little bit what we were talking about earlier, which is kind of a dark, dreary place that feels like it's going to have really dark overtones. It's in the first person perspective, which is not my preferred thing. I like playing games in third person more. It feels like a real shooter. I think I'm going to love Cyberpunk. And there's no way I'm not going to play it. I think I'm going to fall madly and deeply in love with it. But if you put gun to my head, only one of these games, I think I might choose Valhalla, man.
Are you done with that bucket of paint? Are you good in your corner? Like, what are we doing?
Yeah, you gave me rope and I hung myself. So here we go.
I think it's interesting because I agree that Cyberpunk will probably have a heavier feel to it, but I would speculate that when credits roll on each, the number of bodies you put down is probably comparable between the two games, maybe more in Valhalla.
But in a fun way.
It's funny in like how it does it, where it's like that game's still going to be pretty grotesque. I mean, Origins and Odyssey, it kind of went a little fantastical, right? Where you'd like zoom across the whole map and then spear somebody. But like you would also tell, and it's like, that's an upgrade. That's what you do. But
yeah,
you're dropping fools, you know. It has like slow motion.
The first time we saw Cyberpunk, it was naked lady in a bath of ice. Pull her out, cradle her in your arms. She's OD'd. I'm like, oh, that is just it's intense, man. And I get it. You know, they tell intense stories and they do it well. Witcher, very intense, very intense. And laud them for that. It is a strength. I just, you know, man. I don't know.
I get it. This is from your lips, the same lips that said Mario 3D World was better than Mario Odyssey. So I get
it. Stand by it.
We all have, you know, I think that I probably agree with you. I think Valhalla, there's a very good chance that it will be your Valhalla. You know, Half-Life Alyx is its own thing that I feel like will probably stand atop the pedestal. But I think of like traditional games, I think there's a very good chance that Valhalla on a new console or a GTX 3000 series card, whenever they come out, will probably be your favorite thing. That would not surprise me at all.
Do you have any opinion about this, Rich? Did you, when you saw the Valhalla stuff, did you think it looked good?
Yes, I've bounced around with Assassin's Creed, Jeff, similar to you. I was really into a couple of them. A couple of them I skipped. I played a lot of Origins, which is the one before the last one, which is Odyssey. Yeah, which
the Egypt one, Middle Eastern one.
Right. I played a lot of that one, loved it, didn't finish it, but played a lot, but did not play any of the new one, despite the fact that several of my friends have told me many times that it's not only better, but just, you know, one of the best games they've ever played. So yeah, I thought it looked fantastic, as which is not a surprise. And I am looking forward to this one, because I'm not going to skip another one also, because I think, you know, this one is this one feels like it's going to be really the kind of game that is going to really be an excellent representation of a high functioning group delivering something really well. I just this feels like a lot of good things coming together.
Well, we know we've talked a lot about this presentation, but it really is the first glimpse, the first real laying the cards on the table for next gen officially. And I wonder what you guys think overall. You know, I don't think, from my perspective, the visuals weren't, it didn't seem like a massive change, but I feel like all of the things that we know are going to be the hallmarks of next gen don't really come across in a trailer, right? The no loading times, ray tracing potentially on some of these titles. Maybe you don't get that full effect in trailers like this. So I wonder if you guys feel less, more, the same amount of excitement for next gen following this presentation. Rich, what do you think?
Well, it's going to sound silly. No, but I'm day one anyway, so it doesn't matter. You know what I mean? Like, as long as I have the purchasing power at the time to buy both of the new consoles, I'm in day one. Can't wait. But I love video games, right? I mean, that's this is what we do. It's what I love. There doesn't need to be a killer app. There doesn't need to be a game. As long as I'm able to, thankfully, be able to afford these things, I'm going to do it. Gaming is an expensive hobby, and I get that. So, you know, and I'm one of those, you know, it's funny because with the guys that I chat with about video games regularly are really into a lot of the tech, right? A lot of the teraflops and the gigahertz and the heebie-jeebies and whatever else that get people excited. I don't really love speak that language. I don't speak that language, but I don't need to, because you know, I just know that the next things are going to be really, really hot and be the best of the best. And then a couple of years later, there's going to be another one. And I enjoy being able to participate on the, you know, in the newest, latest, best of video games. So yeah. Didn't sell me, but it didn't need to, because once I can get one, I'm getting both of these things.
Sure. Christian, what was your takeaway?
Yeah, I'm very excited for next gen consoles, and I think it probably is like the tech lust or just like, you know, the industry excitement. But as I sit here next to my pretty beefy PC, what I am curious about for this next gen is like, will consoles in some respects be faster than PC? Like, I might have more raw graphical power capable in my PC, but like all of the I'm going to say new word tricks, but you know, like the stuff they're doing, the tech they're doing for these faster loads and stuff like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, you got to buy a new hard drive in your PC if you wanted to. Got to be a real fast SSD if you wanted to.
Yeah, and then like
compete in that way
when the system is kind of built on the ground up for it. Whereas, you know, gaming PCs, you can probably, but it's like doing a bunch of other things as well. Like I can run Premiere on it, or I don't know. I'm sure everything would benefit, but I'm curious how that stuff shakes out and how we kind of
Cerny, test you know, Cerny's that. Presentation was all about those pipelines, right?
Right.
How
right.
they just maximize those pipelines for very specific duties. And yes, so I think you're absolutely correct.
So that's what I'm excited about. I'm curious. I want to play, you know, Valhalla on my PC, and I want to play it on my Series X, and I want to see kind of how those things are different. And what I'm most excited about, this shouldn't be a huge surprise for our listeners or you, I'm super curious about the tech test of Valhalla on Stadia versus Series X. You know, we already had examples of like Red Dead 2 on Stadia versus the Xbox One X, and it being an inferior product graphically. What happens now? Like,
yeah.
Is Stadia keeping up? Are they updating their server racks or whatever? I'm super curious what we will look to as next gen. And I think it's going to be load times. That's going to be the thing, not graphical fidelity, is my right now, like early gen guess.
Well, I'm excited, man. We're going to see. And we got lots of other stories to get to, as well as the games we have been playing. But I want to take a second and thank our first sponsor, which is Ritual. Now more than ever, we all are realizing that we need to, you know, keep our bodies healthy. We're thinking about what we're putting into our bodies. We all want to do the right thing. When you supplement your diet with vitamins and essential nutrients, and Ritual's Essentials is a supplement for women that is two easy-to-take capsules that provide 9 nutrients you need to support a strong foundation for your health. Basically, what happened is a woman who was very interested in reading labels and keeping track of the kinds of things that she put in her body, the kinds of food she was eating. And she realized, you know, am I doing that with my supplements? Am I doing that with my vitamin intake? It doesn't really seem that there is a transparent solution like that. So she invented it. She created Ritual. And Ritual is the multivitamin that she always wanted. And it's honestly the one my wife has always wanted. My wife just got her new shipment of Ritual the other day. She's been taking it. It is much improved experience from her perspective. She tells me all the time how it doesn't have that terrible fishy taste. It's built to be no nausea, even on empty stomachs. It's gentle for empty stomachs. It doesn't give you that kind of queasy feeling that you can just pop your vitamin in the morning before you've had any breakfast or anything. It's great. And there's a mint tab in every bottle because, you know, some of those omega-3s in supplements for women can leave a weird fishy taste and do stuff to your breath that isn't pleasant. But Ritual has thought of it all. It's traceable and transparent, made for obsessive label readers, and it's delivered. It's you subscribe to it so you always know that you've got exactly how much. You don't ever run out. It's great. Plus, there's no strings attached. It's all the essential nutrients your body needs delivered every month. So better health doesn't happen overnight. And right now, Ritual is offering listeners of DLC 10% off during their first 3 months. Fill in the gaps in your diet with Essential for Women, a small step that helps support a healthy foundation for your body. Visit ritual.com/DLC to start your ritual today. That's 10% off during your first 3 months at ritual.com/DLC. ritual.com/DLC. All right, Christian Spicer, what is your story of the week?
It's a story of two trailers. And I'm sorry I forgot to put the one on here, but we can talk about it anyway. The two trailers, Last of Us Part 2, new trailer, Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath, new story trailer, new story DLC for Mortal
Kombat 11. Friendships!
A certain individual reprising the role of a certain half-human, half-robot police officer. Very exciting. And I believe the first time ever campaign DLC for a Mortal Kombat game. And these Mortal Kombat games, I love these stories. They're fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely very cinematic, fantastic. Very well told. Yeah, good stuff.
Fun and slap, you know, like not slapstick's not the right word, but like over the top in the right ways where it's just like, and I mean this with the utmost respect, like the best 90s action movie, you know, or something. It's just, yeah. But well performed, well animated, just absolutely beautiful. I love everything about those games. I love them so much. And so
talk about the opposite of the reading the room problem, right? They walked into, hey, we're going to do friendships. You know, they talk about timing it right. At least for me personally is tuning into the Mortal Kombat new trailer and going, friend, yeah, I just need some friendships, please. They don't need you to show me a new way to dismember someone. Show me a way to they can roll up in an ice cream truck and offer them a nice, delicious ice cream. That's what Jeff needs.
I mean, they right should plenty of dismembering also, don't
I know, but I like the balloons of friendship, you know?
Yeah, the teddy bear and everything. Yeah. It looks awesome. And the pit, bringing back, it's like, it's nostalgia in all the right ways again. And like Shang Tsung coming in and like the story reveal, it looks really, really cool. And this is a time travel story that keeps turning itself on its head in really fun, inventive ways. So I'm super excited for that. That's this month. I had no clue it was capital K coming, until they started teasing it. And then I watched that trailer. And then the other trailer, and I will pitch to you all. I hear it's fantastic, is The Last of Us 2 trailer, which is the story trailer that kind of came after some alleged leaks. Guys, I have so much blocked on Twitter, it's not even funny. And we have a new release date for it as well. So, like, that machine's picking back up again. And I'm curious, Rich, how you approach game trailers kind of late, you know, in a game's announcement cycle. And if you ever kind of do Unsullied, or you're always in, you're down to watch whatever, or kind of maybe using Mortal Kombat 11 Aftermath and The Last of Us 2's new story trailer as maybe the, you know, the canary in the coal mine, like, how did you approach these two trailers, and how do you approach trailers you're maybe excited about as the games get closer?
Yeah, I'm weird. I don't like to watch much, if anything, about stuff that I'm excited about. That's just me. But it's also, and Jeff, cover your ears, I also kind of feel the same way about movie trailers. I can't explain why. I don't have a scientific reason. I can't go through why it is. I just, generally speaking, don't. If I know of something that's going to happen, if a game is coming out that I'm really excited about, I will avoid most, if not all, trailers about it. So, Last of Us 2, did not see it. I'm not going to watch it. I'm going to experience Last of Us 2 at some point.
Maybe yeah, when it comes out. Launch day.
Right.
At some point, what are you doing, Rich? It's called, well, as soon as it unlocks on my GD PS4.
Oh, I know you guys.
Two discs. 100 gigs, the door is locked. I'm dead to my family.
Like, I'm telling you, the Last of Us
just
shook
like me. Joel.
the Last of Us shook me. That game, there was a couple of moments in that game that really shook me. And I'm not 100% sure I'm ready to be shaken quite like that. You know what I mean? Oh, just saying.
I feel like this game's going to be even darker, man, because everything, all the sort of, you know, catchphrases flung around about this one is the first game is about hope. The second game is about loss of hope. You know, it's like, it's about darkness. I'm like, oh God, no. But yeah, it's so funny. The three of us here on this video game podcast and none of us watched the trailer, but I think it's all because we all feel the same way where I don't need a trailer right now to sell me on this game.
It's coming.
And yeah, all I can do is, all I can do right now is ruin moments. And I want to experience this game in the same way I want to experience a great movie. I know the Naughty Dog games deliver cinematic stories better than almost anybody else in the industry. So this to me is like a movie trailer, and therefore not interested in seeing it before I play it. Yeah, and it's going to be here before we know it.
It really oscillates. It's like, cause I am so excited, and I'm trying, like, I think it was the same for Spider-Man when that came out, and God of War as well, where it's like, I want to consume everything about this thing, you know, because I'm so excited for it. I want to like savor the little details. I want those little breadcrumbs now. And I want like the appetizer before the meal. But at the same time, I don't know. It's really hard to know that, oh, well, now I'm playing the game and, you know, I stepped on this piece of glass or whatever, but I saw in the trailer that, you know, I had a shoe on, or I don't know, whatever it is, right? Like you can kind of put things together mentally. It's tough because I did avoid this trailer, but yet we just spent the first 40 minutes talking about all of the other trailers we watched, right?
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. But it's a different beast. Naughty Dog games are a different beast, you know.
Well, one's about awareness and one is about something you're aware of, right? Half of the games correct. That were in the Xbox thing I wasn't aware of. We're all pretty darn aware of The Last of Us 2. So,
yeah. But I mean, I loved the story of Assassin's Creed Odyssey, but that's not why I play those games. You know, like I totally dug the story. Playing as Cassandra, so interesting, so fun. I'm glad there are certain things that were a surprise to me, especially toward the end. There were some really cool reveals in that universe that made me so excited when they happened. But I also I wouldn't have avoided any trailer. You know, it's fine. This is a different beast. I'm not playing Last of Us 2 for any other reason than the story. That is why I'm going. I kind of don't want to put myself through the sneaking past the clickers. I would watch this as a movie if I could.
Well, you can watch the first one as an HBO show eventually, right?
Yeah, that's true.
That's going to be great. Yeah, I don't. Did you watch the Mortal Kombat one though?
I did, yeah.
That's so good.
It's so good.
So good.
I know. It's fun. That's just fun. That's just pulpy fun. And yeah. So my story of the week, you know, we're way long on this segment already. I won't belabor it, but there are two stories here that are sort of linked to me thematically. And I want to talk about smart delivery and do it through the lens of these two stories. The first is that, speaking of EA, speaking of Madden, EA says they're doing, you know, smart delivery, I think, is a really exciting notion. And I think it's going to define this generation of video games. And it's going to be the kind of thing where we're going to look back and go, wow, you had to buy games on multiple systems before? It seems weird. I never had to buy a game on my PC again just because I upgraded my PC. I think that's where we're headed with consoles. And I think it's a very good thing. It's very consumer friendly. It makes you feel like you're in, you know, your library isn't just being erased every time you upgrade your hardware. I think it's good. EA, not really playing ball, pun very much intended, entirely, although they are doing some concessions, which is good. They're specifically saying if you want to upgrade Madden 21 for – you want to buy it for your Xbox One and then upgrade it to Xbox Series X, you have to buy it before December 31st of 2020 and upgrade it before March 31st of 2021. It's a pretty good window, but it isn't the kind of thing where, you know, you eventually get your Xbox Series X 2 years later.
You can't, and you, though. Right? I'm sorry. I don't mean to cut you off. They're basically – what they're doing is they're giving you smart delivery until the end of the season for which that game is licensed.
I guess that's true. I guess that's a – I think that's a very good point in the sense that it is a unique case as a seasonal game that's going to be – released on a yearly schedule, and you know that's always going to be the case. And nobody's going to be playing Madden 21 in 2022. So I guess that's a good point to make. But also, I kind of love the idea that in this new Xbox ecosystem, anything that I buy, and at any point if I upgrade to Series X, it's all going to sort of retroactively work and just be smart delivered, and that's all great. So, but I take your point. I think it's a good one, Rich. The other story that sort of links into that is there is news that Destiny 2, Bungie has confirmed this, Destiny 2 is coming for Xbox Series X and PlayStation 5. And I find this fascinating because I think this is how things are going to be. These are basically PCs now, right? There's no reason why Destiny 2 can't be played on the next version of the console because it's just going to be ported and basically the software is going to work like if you got a new video card on your PC. And maybe they'll be able to unlock some new bells and whistles, add some ray tracing, who knows? All of that sounds kind of cool for Destiny 2 if there is. I mean, no one has said anything about ray tracing, but it's cool. My question is, will it incorporate smart delivery if I bought Destiny 2 3 years ago? You know, I think that's a fascinating question. I hope Microsoft is like, yeah, if you bought Destiny 2 for Xbox One, you'll get it. It's the same game. Why not get it on a new hardware? I don't know if Bungie's down for that, but I hope so. I wonder what you think about that, Rich.
So I think that if not day and date with the launch of both of these new consoles very shortly afterwards, all of the games that are service oriented will be available. Fortnite, Grand Theft Auto 5, The Division, Warframe, all of them. They all will be there, and they all should be there because they all have massive audiences playing them right now, a significant portion of them, which will move forward. It's the best question in right now is, should we expect to pay for that or not?
Well, several of the games you mentioned are free-to-play games.
That's right.
So in those cases, it would be assumed no. And I think that may actually be a precedent for games like Destiny 2 and Division 2 that aren't in that category.
That's right. Like Grand Theft Auto 5 and Red Dead 2. If they're available day one on the new consoles, just the same version as you're playing on the old one, they would have multi-million audiences right then and there. So yeah. To me, it makes complete sense to consider retroactively having Destiny 2 be smartly delivered if on Destiny, right? Like it's
right.
it's not to me just at first glance, and I don't know anything about how the economics work. At first glance, it's not a slam dunk no, and it's not a slam dunk yes. It's a slam dunk. Let's all get together and talk about this for a little while, because there's certainly upside. There's upside in granting people who have purchased your game 3 years ago on one platform access to play that game on a brand new platform. There's a significant value in that, in maintaining a great community and in being receptive to new ideas and new concepts. Obviously, with the ability to generate in-game revenue, it's not it's not a charity. It's clearly it's a two-way street. So, man, I knowing nothing, I would not be surprised if there aren't many other. I would be surprised if Destiny 2 is not retroactive. Like I'll bet you it is retroactive to answer your question, and I'll bet you several other live service oriented games will also choose to do that as well.
What do you think, Christian? You agree with that assessment?
Yeah, I do. I think that I think Rich was right on, nail on the head with it. These service-based games, they're moving away from the purchase of the product being the thing that makes them the money. I mean, I saw that they charged for the Division expansion, Warlords of New York, but they brought the base game down to whatever it was, $199. Destiny, whatever it's called, First Light. Destiny 2 First Light or whatever it is, like, is free. And then they pay for some larger expansion pass style things. They want to get the thing in front of as many people as possible. And so if they're able to, I'm not sure if the console holders will require something, but if they're able to, yeah, I think they want to get it out there for as many people as easily and quickly as possible, right when the console launches. And then maybe they'll look to have the console manufacturers will look to have little taglines they can have on it. Like, play Fortnite on your PS5 and get the blah, blah, blah skin, or like see the ray tracing in all its glory, whatever those bells and whistles that they can maybe tout are. But I think these consoles are going to launch with a vast library of games you already know and love that you can pick up and play. And that's something that was lacking in the prior generational jump from 360 to Xbox One. Like, I would have loved for Geometry Wars just to come over. I know that's not a game as service, but you know what I mean? Like, and Xbox has been certainly talking about a lot of that. All your digital games come over. And I think if they can come over and get boosted visually, like Microsoft did a good job of that this generation, the later half of it with Series X, or like improved for Series X, for Xbox One X. I think we're going to see more of that. And I think games like Destiny, maybe even The Division or some of these Tom Clancy games are going to make themselves available on the new consoles relatively cheaply. And then they'll have the big new iterations that, will come out kind of status quo.
And not only is that historically the opposite, it's almost unprecedented, right? When I was a kid, my dad would get so bent out of shape when I would posit the theory of, could we maybe get a Nintendo 64 instead of this NES I've had for 7 years. Well, all the games don't work for that. What are you trying to rip us off? And, okay, maybe not, right? But like, even PS2 to PS3, PS3 to PS4, like, now all of a sudden, just the fact that this is, it's not only going to happen in some degree, it just happens at all, is pretty awesome. And I think a really good thing overall for anybody who's a console gamer. It makes these consoles so much more economically justifiable day one with all this stuff that's there to play.
There's a great.
Well, also, I mean, looking at the Xbox specifically, you will buy a new console, and if you pay $10, I'm sure it'll come with a month free of Game Pass. But even if you just pay $10, you got 100 games that work on your new console and that are super high caliber. So the Xbox Game Pass alone as a launch title is pretty impressive.
There's a good. I think it was in. Blake Harris's friend of the show's a console war book, like about that and Super Nintendo or Nintendo, like parents are going to be outraged that they have to release all new. Yeah. They can't, their games don't carry over. And for so long, we accepted it in consoles. Whereas for PC, that wasn't the case. Your game wouldn't necessarily get updated, but because PC games were very scalable, if you upgraded your rig, you could usually go back and at least turn not Crysis, but any other game up to max settings. And I like the idea of that. I think it's cool. I think it's really cool.
All right. Well, like I said, we went super long in the news, but it's fascinating stuff. And I think a big week of interesting news. But let's jump in and talk about the games that we have been playing in the playlist. Rich, what have you been spending your time with on your playlist?
A whole bunch of stuff. I won't go into a whole lot of detail on them. I can't explain why, but because I'm not a Doom fan. I mean, I played it when I was a kid and dabbled here and there, but certainly have missed a lot more Doom than I haven't. I also subscribe to every single service for video games possible between the Xbox and PlayStation Now and the Nintendo service and the PC Games Pass. Yet I went out when it came out and bought Doom, and I don't regret it for a moment. Doom is, and I sort of alluded to it earlier. It's so confident in what it is. You can tell it's just made by people who know exactly what they want to do, how they want to do it, and are completely just in charge of what they're doing. It's unbelievable. It is so frenetic. It's chaotic. I am terrible at it. Absolutely terrible. I can't even get past the point. I am playing it on the easiest level, which, by the way, guys, the easiest level on Doom is not easy. It's not. it might be normal, but it's not easy because I have been stuck on this one area for at least the last, you know, I've probably tried for 2 or 3 hours trying to get past it. You know, and I'm not a skilled video game player by any stretch. I never was, and as I get older, I'm definitely not. But I've just it's just a lot. Doom is really good at what it's trying to do. It's fun. It's crazy. It's the weapons are unbelievable. The enemies are ridiculous. You're just running and jumping and flying and shooting and blowing stuff up. And I don't know what's going on most of the time, but it's really fun. And I've just been having a blast with it.
That's great. I love it. I can't. I don't know what's happening. I can't get past the part, and I love it.
it's just, you know, like you're not going to play a better version of this kind of a game, right?
Right.
Like this is as good as it gets at this kind.
The needle is pinned. You know what I mean? We can't go. There's no more RPMs past this point. We've peaked. Yeah, I love it.
Exactly right.
What else you got?
My son, I just wanted to mention, my son loves Super Mario Maker 2 and the new update that they released allowing you to build worlds. He has been absolutely captivated by it. So I just wanted to give that a shout out. I personally, Super Mario Maker 2 is one step beyond what I'm able to do and to enjoy Mario, but my son who loves to tinker and build levels in Portal and in Mario, like the Super Mario Maker 2 has always been his thing. And the new update, he has been blown away by it. So I want to mention that. Something else. Go ahead.
I'm tempted to get it for my kid. I think he's a little young yet, but we've been playing Super Mario World on the 3DS and he loves it. And he's gotten to the point where he can sort of get his way. He asked me to help him pass a lot of the stuff, but I feel like a 2D Mario would be a wise investment. I don't even own Mario Maker 2, so I'm tempted to get it just to give him some levels to mess around with. And then I can make simple stuff for him to do too if I wanted to. And I don't know. I might end up.
His face will light up with delight. I guarantee it will, because the way that Nintendo delivers Super Mario Maker 2 is just spectacular. It's spectacular. And if you tinker away and you show him just the ability for you, it's a wonderful moment when you realize what you can do and the power that you have, whether you've been playing Mario for 30 or 40 years, like some of us, or whether you have been playing it for a few weeks, like your son, although to him, that might as well be the same sort of equivalent. It's a wonderful thing to see kids, especially what they come up with and how they just interact with it. It's really cool. So I strongly recommend that you do that. Cool. Something else I've been playing the last few weeks has been the Golf Club 2019. And I've been playing it with a couple of my friends on Wednesday nights. We've been getting together and we set up a society, which is basically like, you know, it's your online country club. And we have these tournaments. So once a week, there's a tournament and you can play the tournament whenever you want to. And there's a leaderboard with all the different people in the country club or the society or whatever it is. But we all get together at a certain point in time once a week and we play the 18 holes. And there's just something, again, it's with having nothing to do with what's going on, but also having everything to do with what's going on, playing 18 holes of golf with two of your buddies is really fun, whether it's real golf or whether, you know, you're all just sitting in your houses playing the Golf Club 2019. But that game, I don't know if either of you guys have ever played the game. The Golf Club as a series is, it's a really extraordinary franchise. In it's incredibly customizable, and you know, people build, when I tell you people build amazing golf courses, people build amazing golf courses. It's just unbelievable what they do. And it's also very social and very online. So I really enjoy the Golf Club 2019. I don't know if you guys caught it. 2K recently announced earlier this week, PGA 2K21, which is the next version of this game. So the Golf Club moniker is no longer going to be part of this, but you know, 2K publishing this is a great thing for the franchise. So it's probably going to get a release date in the next week or two, and I think it'll probably come out in the next few months. So it'll be interesting to see how this series evolves. But the Golf Club is really good at just being a good golf game, but also letting you play golf with your friends in real time. It's a really cool experience.
Very cool. Yeah, it's not something I have any experience with. I don't even really play real golf much, much to my dad's chagrin. But, you know, I love these opportunities, like you said, to sort of create a clubhouse that you can do virtually. You know, you create that stuff with your friends. I know you've mentioned in previous appearances on our show, you know, having your seasons with your buddies in Madden or mm-hmm. or whatever. That stuff is very attractive to me. It's such a cool feature to be able to come back to that and keep an ongoing competition in that way is really neat.
It really is. And it gives it just, it's not like there's any more stakes to this, right? It's not for money. It's just for bragging rights or not even that, but just to participate in these when other people are also participating in that just gives it a different level of fun, I guess, for lack of a better word.
Yeah. Cool. So that's the Golf Club 2019.
Yep.
Anything else you want to mention?
And just on the treadmill, because you know, Jeff, I'm a geek in sneaks. I get on the treadmill, 3 miles, 46 minutes, 3-4 times a week on the treadmill, and I play MLB The Show or Pro Evolution Soccer. They're just amazing sports games that are – I'm amazed at how good they look, at how great they play, at how beautiful they sound, at the care and the detail put into MLB The Show and to Pro Evolution Soccer. That's my comfort food these days on the treadmill. They're just awesome, and that's all I need to say about them. Great games.
Great games. All right. Before we move on to Christian, I want to thank our second sponsor, which is Audible. You've been hearing me talk about Audible the last few weeks. They wanted me to let you know that they have a new show, a new Audible show. It's a all-star comedy cast making a new scripted audio comedy. It's written by John Lutz of SNL and 30 Rock, and it's called Escape from Virtual Island, starring Paul Rudd and Jack McBrayer and Paul Appel and Amber Ruffin. Really great comedic actors, and it's all about VR. It's really cool. It's set on a remote luxury resort island in the year 2038, where adventure seekers flock to live out their wildest fantasies in custom-made virtual reality simulations. But when an important guest goes missing, that ragtag search party led by Paul Rudd's maladjusted resort heir plunged deep into the world of VR in hopes of returning with the lost guest and some sense of reality. Start your spring off completely lost in comedy delight. Escape from Virtual Island. Listen free with a 30-day trial. Just go to audible.com/virtualisland or text Virtual Island to 500-500. All right, Christian, what is on your playlist this week?
The greatest video game of the year. I'm speaking in hyperbole, but every game. I'm in love with so many games. Streets of Rage 4, I know you talked about it last week. This game is the greatest video game of all time. And now I want all of it's my favorite, you know, my nostalgia genre that I talk about so much, the Punisher, Turtles. I want all of them redone. Like, I want all of them to get the Streets of Rage 4 treatment. I want Turtles in Time again, you know? Like, I want sequels made with the love and care that Streets of Rage 4 was made with.
How about a Golden Axe? Let's get a new Golden Axe.
Yeah, Golden Axe, X-Men Arcade, all of them. Or find some new characters. Give me a, I've wanted a Daredevil brawler for years, and I still want one. And Streets of Rage 4 has demonstrated that the, I mean, for an old fogey like me, you know, the genre still works. Like, it doesn't need a full reinvention. And I know others have kind of come along, and there have been some good ones. Double Dragon Neon, I thought, was pretty good. But there's something about everything this game does so well. And maybe it's the, you know, like the retro inspired unlockables, or the soundtrack just still being killer, or the way it's, you know, the sequel takes place in a big jump in time as the world, and it like references back to things, but it's so pure and sticks to what made the original game so great, and does it in such a beautiful visual way that it also, and maybe it's just the world we're living in right now, you know, you're beating people up, but doing it so in such a friendly way, you know, like an upbeat way. I think it's an absolutely perfect game for, it's only spring, but like this, you know, spring, summer gaming, get together online with folks and play and just kind of brawl your way through, playing solo. It's so much fun, and it sounds good, and it looks great. And I think Streets of Rage 4 is just an absolute home run. I love it.
How about a new Bad Dudes? Where's Data East? Who owns the rights to Bad Dudes? You know, I'd be down for Bad Dudes.
Yeah, I wonder where Data East is. I'm sure, like, yeah, I have no idea.
All of the splintered rights probably fell into weird copyright. Yeah, like
Activision owns Bad, but Bethesda owns Dudes. You know,
something. Well, I'm glad you're loving Streets of Rage 4. I found it to be really cool in short bursts, but not as – I just wished they had leaned into a little bit more modernization of it. And I understand that's not what they were making. They were making a retro version with really pretty, you know, technology upgrades. But I much prefer something like a Castle Crashers, which is what I referenced, I think, last week as well, where it's like Castle Crashers goes, hey, what if these games were made now? What systems would they have? I think that is super exciting, and I would want more of that. I would love more people to say, hey, what if we did these 2D side-scrolling brawlers but really leaned into making them feel modern from a systems point of view, not just from a visual and auditory point of view.
And I loved Castle Crashers, and I look forward to other games that do that, and the other games that I'm sure our audience can point out that have. But I think what I find so refreshing about Streets of Rage 4 is that it clearly had a vision, and it committed to it wholeheartedly, and it knocked it out of the park. Like, it's not trying to be this plus this is this for 20. It's Streets of Rage 4. They said from the beginning what it was, with the sound, all the stuff that was important to that franchise. And I love seeing that. So I when reviews came out, like online, people were talking about, it's like, oh yeah, there's going to be just like a brawler tax. Like, it's not good enough because it is what it is. And I understand that, but I also think it's okay for not every game to be for everybody. And if you are a fan of that 90s style brawler, please know that Streets of Rage 4 crushes that. It does it as good as any of them, and it looks incredible. You know, it doesn't even make me nostalgic. Like, I like the pixel options in there. They do those really well. But it looks like how Punisher looked to me in the arcades back in the day. Yeah. Like, that's what it does. It does a modern take on what those graphics can be. It's absolutely stunning. I like it a lot.
Streets of Rage 4. Yep. What else is on your playlist?
Well, now that I got internet, I'm getting into my St. Jude charity streams. Like, I'm glad that we confirmed that Saturday, May 30th at 8 p.m. is when you, Tim, and I are rescheduling. Confirmed.
Penciled in stone.
Canceled. From lightning bolt to Moses's tablet. Not an iPad, like, you know, the old timey type of tablet.
Moses's tablet. Moses just upgraded his tablet. He got the new, you know, he got the new keyboard, everything.
He got iOS 10 commandments. I started my,
I get it.
Thank you. My Monster Hunter World, my Friday night streams. My first one was.
Oh!
Yeah, yesterday.
What class did you pick?
Dude, so I've played for 2 hours. It's still up on my Twitch. I usually delete these after they're done, but I'm going to leave these charity streams up. I played for 2 hours, my first go through. People in chat were like, what did you do? So I have a charge blade, which I guess is very difficult.
Oh yeah, that's yeah, yes.
It's so cool though. It's like a shield.
It is very cool. It is very cool, but it's all
timing. And then I can connect them and make them into a big ass axe.
Yeah. No, it's cool, but it's you did not set yourself up for success, my friend. It's your first Monster Hunter.
I tried a couple of other weapons and I didn't feel them, and I tried this one and I immediately felt it. I don't know. I'll tell you what.
Range. Start with a ranged weapon, dude. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, I came into this game late, right? Like the ice expansion is now probably a year old or whatever, and the game's iterated a whole bunch since it came out. And I know that Monster Hunter, from my Vita playing days, you know, dabbling, it's never been. It's not a Souls game, but it's also not for. It's not Call of Duty. Like, look up, look down. You got it, partner. Like that. Yeah. This game, my goodness, it just kicks you. And like, there's so many. I feel like I read a book. There's so many menus, and like each paragraph has like four highlighted words. So I'm like, well, those are all important. There's, I don't know what that is. It's like a defined term. It's like the tablet of the receptor of the sequencing matrix. Go talk to the cook, and I'm like, what? I can't.
At least this game has it's got the breadcrumb thing that, what are they called? The spores?
My little fairy mist or whatever that I
follow. Yeah, the previous games didn't have that. So, you know,
yeah,
that's a huge, huge quality of life improvement.
But I only planned on playing for like an hour or so. I ended up playing for two. So I was clearly enjoying it. Like, I don't quite know what I did. I think it started me because I'm playing it like old. It's like, I think I start with some pretty badass armor now that maybe you didn't start with when you started the game. But I really love the hub world. Like, its level design I think is really cool and unique. It kind of feels like I'm totally blanking on it, the Robinson Adventure, like the you know, like
Swiss Family Robinson.
Yeah, like treehouse built into the world, and it's like the ships are suspended up above, and it like and even just the environments that I kind of walked around and spent time in just feel really cool. Like, you go into like a dark, deep, lush part, and then you're out in the ocean, or, you know, with the waves crashing on the beach. And I'm playing on PC. It looked great. One thing I thought was, I just chalked it up to like, oh, Monster Hunter, like the very, very short intro prologue type thing where you get shipwrecked. I couldn't, and I realized that I'm a weirdo and I invert my controls, but I couldn't pause it and invert. So I had to play that first 10 minute prologue without being able to invert. And then the game starts and I can. It's just like, so weird.
Just to punish you for inverting.
And then, I don't know. I really like it. Like, I don't think I will, air quote, finish it. I know people put thousands of hours into it.
There's no finishing it.
Right. There's a story. But yeah. I'm going to keep playing on my Fridays this month, and I'm having fun with it. And I think it's a great game to stream. Like, the chat was super helpful and informative. But, like, I don't know what's going on. Like, you're on this boat, and it crashes. And then you get to this village.
Have you fought anything really huge yet?
Hold on. Let me finish my boat story.
Okay, sorry.
Boat crashes and you go to this village that's clearly been there for a long time. And they're like, we've been waiting. Like, other people that crash, like, we've been waiting for you. We were going to go look for you. But then we didn't. But then, like, that village that's been there for a long time also has boats crashed on it. So, like, does every boat crash as it comes into
Monster Island, dude? Boats crash on Monster Islands.
It's so bizarre. I don't know what's going on. And like, the fishing guy is like, I came here because I caught all the other. So the monsters, nothing huge yet. I think the monster,
nothing like where you're walking on it.
No, nothing of that magnitude yet. But I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm charging my blade and using my vials or whatever and making a big ass axe.
I honestly, if you ever get frustrated, ranged weapons, that's how I found my way into it, is not getting disoriented. The timing is different. You can bob and weave and keep moving a little better. I found my way in through ranged weapons first. And,
well, Jeff, if you know anything about me, you know that I don't leave my home planet. So these are my weapons.
Yeah. You're pot committed. But the bow, I think it's called the bow. The bow is my like jam. I really loved that for a long time.
Yeah. I'm playing it like a soul game. I know that's not necessarily right, but like, that's what my pre-programmed hands are telling me. So I'm like, a lot of dive rolling and running up in there and trying to figure stuff out.
Good on you, man. Good on you. Monster Hunter World.
And the only other thing is that this actually the same day we're recording this, but my first, because we had to delay ours with Tim, but my Saturday stream with a bud, Cheapy D and I played PUBG, and it was the first time either of us had really played in years since we last played PUBG. It's still PUBG, you know? Does that make sense? Like
it couldn't be less surprising.
Yeah, like they've added season passes and like they try to make it like more fun and like there's better outfits, like more entertaining looking outfits and stuff. But we finished seventh, was our best duos, and it's still it's still PUBG, and I bet it's still massively popular.
No doubt it is. I want to talk about a game that I have been playing off and on for a month and a half, but like had a weird embargo on it. It was up, I think last week or the week before, and I just forgot that I had played it for so long and hadn't talked about it. It's a really interesting game. It's a game called Filament. It's an indie game. It's from Beard Envy is the name of the developer. I think it's their first game. This is a game that costs under $20 on Steam. It's a puzzle game. And boy, I found it to be very zen for the times when I just kind of wanted to focus my mind on something and not think about the horrors of the real world for a little while. I played a lot of Filament and really enjoyed it. It is hard, but boy, it's one of those games where you just stare at the screen. You stare at the screen. You experiment a little bit, but you stare at the screen. Let me explain. Filament is a game about some sort of space person, a astronaut of some kind in the future who is on a space station and has to explore it and move from room to room. Each room is powered down, and the only way to power it up is to connect the filaments, to connect a power source to certain nodes. And the way you do that is you in this sort of top-down isometric view, 3D view, you move this little robot that is connected to a long wire. There's no limit to the length of the wire, but you have to connect the wire to, excuse me, you have to string the wire around the room to power on these nodes. And so you loop the wire around these nodes. If you imagine like a pegboard, if you're looking down on a pegboard and it's got pegs sticking up out of it, and you have like a string on in your hand, and the string is connected to one side of the pegboard, and you can wrap the string around pegs and create big complicated patterns, weaving it up and down and around the different pegs until you wrap it around all the pegs you need to. I hope that makes sense. It's kind of hard to explain. Does that make sense to you guys? No? Nobody? Did I lose everyone?
No, I'm here. I don't know if we lost Rich.
Does it make sense to you what I'm saying?
Yes, but I'll be honest. I have a hard time visualizing puzzles. Does that make sense? That makes sense.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing over and over. It layers of more complex versions of this, but it's basically taking a string and trying to weave it around a pattern to connect the points that you need to connect. And the string has to touch certain things, can't touch other things. And you just sit there like moving the string around and weaving it around, wrapping it around here and there. And oh no, that doesn't work. Oh, I still need to get that one before I can get over there. And the tricky thing is, it's like Centipede or something or Light Cycles, you know, in Tron, where you block yourself because you're, it's like pulling an extension cord around a room, and you want to double back to get a part that you didn't get, but now the extension cord is bumping into itself and now you can't go past there. So you're literally blocking your own pathways.
It's funny. I was shouting, not shouting, but I was speaking loudly into my microphone. I totally get it, and I get it because of the very first word you said, which is the game is called Filament. So if you think about it, that word and then what you're describing, it made sense. But of course, I was muted the whole time. So, yeah.
Well, yes, this is a diabolically difficult puzzle game, but I kind of love it. I think it is so smart and so different and so interesting, but it is one of those things where the pattern is completely open-ended. So you almost have no sense of whether you've even your first move, like, okay, well, I'm just going to walk up and start weaving my thing around up here. That could be wrong. It's so completely open-ended. And I have a sense that there are multiple solutions potentially for some of the puzzles, because you have complete freedom of how you move this thing. And it's all about just getting yourself into a problematic pattern, blocking yourself. But then it gets so hard. There are little nodes that will shut off the power to your filament, to your line, that you can't have to avoid. You get to multiple robots where you have, one robot on one side of the room, another robot on another side of the room, and they can block each other, and you have to switch back and forth between them. And there's certain colored ones that can only go to certain other colored nodes. And it is really diabolical, but I recommend it. It's called Filament, and I think it's like $17 on Steam. If you're into puzzle games.
Chat says it also has a free demo.
Oh, very good. You try the demo. Because you'll either love this or it'll break your brain. But breaking your brain can also be a thing that you love. And I found it to be very zen, and it required such focus and such trial and error and constant thinking that it took my mind off of other things, and I appreciated that about it. So I recommend it. It's called Filament.
Nice.
All right, let us jump into some VR talk, because we've all been playing VR this week.
Virtual reality. VR. Virtual reality. Just VR.
So, Rich, you have been playing some VR games. Which headset do you use?
First of all, I want to sing along with that, but I know that it'll ruin it for everyone that's listening, so I don't. But I want to be singing virtual reality. Just VR. Anyway, sorry. This past Christmas, we got the Oculus Rift S.
Hmm.
Which,
awesome.
Not sure if you knew this or not, Jeff. Wink, wink. What a machine. What a piece of technology this thing is. Oh, my God. And I'm not really a VR guy. Now, we do have the PSVR as well. So, I'm not really a VR guy who owns two virtual reality, systems. But
Let me tell you, speaking from experience, they multiply. I don't know how it happened. They multiply.
So yeah, we got the Oculus Rift S, we love it. It's really impressive, really impressive.
So what have you been enjoying lately on your S?
So I have been enjoying. I don't know if you've heard of this game, Jeff. Little indie company made it. Little under the radar. It's called Half-Life Alyx. Have you played it?
Jeff hates this game. He hates it. Why'd you bring this up? It's going to be brutal.
Half-Life Alyx, eh? Hmm. Sounds like something I'd enjoy speaking about at length.
Now Jeff's going to be angry all weekend, Rich. It gets under his skin. He's going to have a horrible Mother's Day now. You've ruined everything. One pet peeve of his.
I'm so sorry. Oh, my God, this game.
Are you talking about future DLC game of the year, Half-Life Alyx? Are you talking about
this thing? Portal is my all-time favorite video game and video game franchise and environment and world. Half-Life, I have a deep respect for Half-Life 2. Talk about games that have shaken me. Half-Life 2 is one of those games that really shook me, but I'm by no means is Half-Life, like, am I a big Half-Life guy? But I just enjoy being in that world in which Portal is a thing, and just the little subtle nuances that you if you've spent the incredible amount of time that myself and my son have in Portal, Half-Life has some cool features to it related to that. But I mean, that aside, oh my gosh, I am so impressed by everything about Half-Life Alyx, and I'm not even a fan of the franchise. Like at the very beginning, Jeff, there it flashes on the screen something along the lines of, and it feels like a month ago since I saw it, but it's like right after John Peterson dies or something like that. And I remember being like, wait, who's John Peterson? Did someone die? Am I supposed to know who that is? But then all of a sudden you're in the game. And then for the next 3 or 4 hours, like that doesn't matter anymore. Right. So that's how like disconnected I am with Half-Life. I'm tangentially aware of even the core story and characters and stuff. And I've been captivated by this game. It's so well done. Similar to Doom, where when you're playing it, you're thinking to yourself, the people who made this game know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it. That's what Half-Life Alyx is. It is so well realized. It is so confident in itself. The sense of just the opening scene when you're on the balcony is mesmerizing. It's somehow, even though it's in a very dystopian world, it's almost hopeful as you look around, and then you descend into this really, really nasty underworld, and you experience all of these different types of creatures, and sometimes you're solving a puzzle, and sometimes you're shooting stuff, and sometimes you're learning just how to reload something. How do you reload that stupid? Oh man, I died so many times not reloading properly. But like, you know, it's so creepy and icky and nasty. But yet there's the spirited dialogue that when you're just about like, okay, I can't deal with this. All of a sudden, you'll start chatting, you know, with the science, or you know, with the guy who's helping you out, and then you'll have a little moment of hope, and then you'll, okay, I'm going to forge on and do it. And I'm doing a terrible job of describing why I love Half-Life Alyx, but this game blows my mind. Now, I can't play it for more than 15 minutes at a time. Like,
it's kind of like your Doom experience. I have no idea what I'm doing. Yeah. I can't get past the level. It is the most amazing thing.
No, ever. I'm the opposite. I know exactly what's going on in Half-Life Alyx, but like after 15 to 20 minutes, I need a break because it's so intense. It's so intense in it, but I don't mean that in a bad way. Like, I mean that in the best possible way. I played all sorts of stuff in VR, which has all been good. Nothing has surrounded me like Half-Life Alyx has. It's just so well realized and so well done. And I am captivated by it. And I can only play so much of it until I need a break and catch my breath. And then, all right, I'm going back in. You know, I got to sort of psych myself up. It's amazing. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I agree, obviously, with all of that. And I do think you did a good job of explaining the emotional feeling of that game. You know, I think I tweeted this, that at one point, the first time a face hugger got on my face, I smacked my own headset with the
– Oh, yeah.
Because I was like, get off me. It's a horror game, but it is – You know, it is immersive in a way that I've never experienced it. You know, it is quite, you do feel, like you said, the globules of slime. You feel there's a visceral nature to everything because it's right there. You can lean in and look at it. And the game does such a good job of convincing you that all these spaces are real and are lived in. And it's extraordinary. It's extraordinary. I know there was a big thread in our subreddit about some folks explaining to me why it's so frustrating for some. The conversation that Christian and I had a few weeks ago about price point being a real limiting factor on VR, and I get it.
Oh, sure,
I get it. It is. I can understand that frustration
100%.
But I certainly wish nothing but the potential for all of this stuff to be within reach for everybody, because I think it's the future. I think it's a really new way to experience video games, and this. Nobody's doing it better than Half-Life Alyx.
No way. And a couple things that some things that first ticked me off, now I appreciate in a weird way. I was sort of joking about the loading of the guns, but it's brilliant how
each
gun needs to be loaded in a different way, and you press different buttons in a certain way. And oh, by the way, you're being jumped at by all these things, and you have to do this the right way, but there's incredible tension, and if you miss it, you're dead. And I'm dead. Son of a.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's so good. And conservation of individual bullets is a thing that
there's always enough, but just enough.
Yeah. Video games haven't asked you to care about that. I mean, you talk about Doom where it's like ammo is this metaphysical concept. You know, it's not right. Ammo isn't even a thing in, right. in Doom. It's this notion of ammo. But, you know, Half-Life Alyx says, what if everything is physical and every bullet is matters and the physical manipulation of all those things is the game. I mean, it's a really wonderful sort of back to basics idea of what it must be like to survive and have your life on the line at every given moment.
And there's just those moments, right? And even Half-Life 2, which I remember, you know, it's been a while since I played, but like the bridge in Half-Life 2, right? There's a few moments when you're on that bridge, when you just stop and you go, whoa.
Yeah.
There's a few moments, and I'm not done. I'm not even close to done. I'm only in like chapter 4.
Oh boy, you have so many things.
Oh, I know.
The thing that's amazing about this game too is that they continually one-up themselves. Every level just feels like, well, that's the coolest thing I've ever done in VR.
Right.
And then they go, well, that was nothing, you know. Have you gone to the laundromat yet?
No.
Okay.
Right. No, I haven't.
That's not that to me, when I got to the laundromat, there's a sequence that happens in the laundromat with electricity, and where I went, this might be the coolest enemy. The coolest kind of encounter that I've ever done in VR. And then like the next level is like, oh no, I hadn't seen anything yet. It's so amazing. Just the pacing of that game of constantly going, here's a really amazing idea, but then this isn't the best you'll see. It,
right.
it keeps getting more inventive and clever.
And I just love it. Doom and Half-Life Alyx. I just love playing these games that are made by these developers who are just at the top of their game and they know it. But they know it from an arrogant perspective. They're just you're getting the best of you're getting the best version of the best thing that a company that really knows what they're doing can do right now. It's
just so hot, but they don't act like it, you know? It's like they, you know. so we could fawn over Half-Life Alyx all day long, but Christian's going to leave the show.
Yeah, we don't.
What else have you been playing in VR?
Well, the other VR game I'm going to mention two real quick, and they're games that you've been talking about for years, Jeff. My son loves Beat Saber on the Oculus.
Yeah.
Absolutely loves it. He builds his own levels. He makes his own levels in Beat Saber. He spends hours perfecting them and assigning them to the music. And I love how Beat Saber gives you the ability to do that. You know, some people like playing games. Some people like building games and designing games. Some people like doing both. My son's a kind of he's more in the building and the designing. Like you give him a game with a level editor, he'll spend 90% of his time in the level editor. And so he does a lot of that in Beat Saber.
Just side note, you know that they're releasing a level editor for Half-Life Alyx, right?
Are they what?
They have announced they will be a level editor for Half-Life Alyx.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Oh boy. Okay. That's good. That's amazing.
so excited for
he's deep into Beat Saber. Everybody who knows anything about VR knows Beat Saber is great. That's not news. Space Pirate Trainer. What a fun game. What a super duper incredibly fun game. Just blasting crazy stuff in big in mechanical explosions. Spectacular. And then I cannot overdo how much I also love Vader Immortal in VR. Wow.
Yeah.
Not in a Half-Life wow, right? Vader Immortal is much more like playing in a movie, although it's perfectly fine, right? With the controls and the, you know, there's cool things that you're doing with the lightsabers and things like that, but it's much more like a movie, which is again, it's fine. It is what it is. Vader Immortal's great. It's such an experience. It's so well done. Again, it's really nice playing something that you can tell got the love that it needed. Right, it got the resources. It got the right level of care. Whoever was in charge at this at the highest levels and the medium levels, they're Star Wars people. They get it. They know it. Like Vader Immortal, again, it's one of those things. It's a real amazing experience, and I'm a big fan and have been playing a lot of Vader Immortal. Haven't finished the third episode. I'm halfway through the last episode. It's great. It's and again, I'm not even a big Star Wars guy. I mean, I like Star Wars. I'm a guy who grew up in the 80s who doesn't love like Star Wars,
right.
But I'm not like a you know, it's not like the my favorite thing. And Vader Immortal, spectacular. So that's the other VR game I'm playing.
Very cool. Christian Spicer, I am so curious. I've been meaning to try the game. Well, I don't even know if you call it a game. I guess it is a game that you have been playing in VR. I've been meaning to give it a shot because I've heard good things. Tell me about Supernatural.
Yeah, I want to go back to Vader Immortal because I keep forgetting I wasn't on last week. So there were like things I've played that I haven't talked about yet. Supernatural.
I'll never forget you weren't on last week. It was
such a good show.
Such a good episode.
Yeah.
I mean, but Lana is she's just, you know, everything that you're not.
Was anyone on to say her name wrong?
Oh, I'm sure we did. You know, but nothing welcomes Lana onto the show like saying her name incorrectly.
That was such a fun episode, and I'm so glad she did it. I also love having internet again, though. But she can come back. You know, like we're not the same person. You know, it's not Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne. Like we can be in the same room.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I'm just saying. I'm throwing it out there.
But it would be nice if you left.
Okay. Well, I bid you adieu. So starting with the name, Supernatural is a game that I have to Google fitness Oculus game every time. Name.
It does not conjure fitness in any way.
No, it conjures a really good CW show. Like
that's that game about fighting supernatural creatures, right?
Yeah. I don't get it. I don't get it. I don't get it at all. But I ordered the as our 2 weeks was it 2 weeks ago? Whenever we talked about it, like I ordered the face shield, like the neoprene.
Oh, you did?
I did. I got to get my sweat on in VR. And the vistas are gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. It's you're kind of just like floating. It like puts like a a yoga mat style thing down that is kind of your center where you're standing or whatever. But it's just floating above ground. Like one, you're on in a volcano, like it's not like planted on the ground, but really cool, really, really stunning. And then it's a subscription. I think it's $30 a month or whatever it is. And the free trial.
Deep.
Yeah. I forget how much it is. I mean, it's not the most expensive game subscription I've ever heard of, Jeff.
No, it isn't.
It is expensive. But it's one of those things where I'm trying to figure out the actual workout-ness of it versus the cost. We're like, as we've been home for a long time, I don't think I can justify. I have friends that swear by their Peloton, and it seems so expensive. But I also paid for CrossFit for months when I was allowed to go outside. And that's
always bringing up the CrossFit.
Thank you. And that's not cheap, So like this thing, like I get sweaty. It's not weights the same way that, it's aerobic style stuff, but you're doing a lot of air squats and you're bending and you're moving, and you're twisting. And it's like encourages you to do full arm swings, and it's like swing hard, like through things. And it's really smartly designed in terms of how it gets you to spin and try to stay on track and bobbing and weaving. So it feels, more like a jazzercise style thing, than like going and lifting weights, or I imagine even than doing like a spin class, like a Peloton or something like that. But it's really cool to see, people talking about how Beat Saber is such a great exercise, and like someone taking that and saying, yeah, it is. And we're going to up it. We're going to lean into that stuff. It has you doing squats and side lunges. And I agree that the coach is chatting a lot, but it doesn't get in the way. I found it encouraging. It's not like a repeat of the same thing over and over again, like 2004 sports games or whatever,
Does it feel like a game, or does it feel like you are, you're in your workout regimen?
A little bit of both, right? It feels like a more workout focused Beat Saber. It really does. It's super similar mechanics to what you're doing in Beat Saber, but you're spinning around. And so I need to go into it knowing that I'm going to get sweaty, which is something that I'm not used to when I game, as I have not been able to get Ring Fit Adventure. So it's like accepting that mindset. And I don't think that sweating with the VR helmet on, I know you say you get down and dirty pretty much every time when you Beat Saber and stuff, but that isn't an experience that I enjoy yet. Maybe I'll get used to it. It's like, you know, sweating in jeans, you know, it's like,
oh God, yeah.
It doesn't feel right. You know, like you're not supposed to do it.
Well, you shouldn't always put jeans on to go in your VR headset. You don't have to wear jeans.
Got it. My bad. Yeah. My face is perfectly fine. Not sweaty at all, but my jeans are just so sweaty.
Yeah. I get it.
But it's well done. And I can easily recommend checking it out, especially with the demo. And you don't even have to like sign up for the free, whatever week, or I forget what it is, to be honest. There's like an introductory class. You can go in and it will calibrate. And it just kind of, it's like a tutorial for more or less, but you can see the vistas. And I think it's worth the time to do that. And kind of get what the experience is, but I think it's cool. And I hope to see more of it. I think, you know, the time is right for that kind of stuff. And we're certainly seeing the home fitness boom coming back again as people are staying home. But Supernatural is the name of the app, and it is an awful name.
Because why wouldn't it be called that?
I have no idea. Because maybe it makes you supernatural. You get so buff.
You're now superly natural.
Yeah. I don't know. Go ahead.
I was going to loop back
to Vader Immortal. So I finished episode 3. Rich, I will not spoil anything for you, but I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. But I also feel like Vader Immortal, all of the chapters together, the whole thing or whatever, it illustrates both the highs and lows of, and I haven't played much Half-Life Alyx, but kind of like of VR, of current state VR, where it's so incredible to see Vader walk up to you and be in your face and be life-sized and be like right up on you. And it's just
when those stormtroopers blew off the door the very first time and I turned around and they walked in, I was like, whoa, that blew my mind.
So good. And it's so cool to be in your ship and like be able to explore and like have this Star Wars experience. I think it's Maya Rudolph is the droid in it, and she's great. And like to have that interaction is really, really cool. But then like when I'm fighting the stormtroopers, it's not how I would do it in a air quote regular video game. It's like my feet are planted and I'm waggling my arm to block the things. And like you're very limited in what you're doing. Whereas if I was playing that same moment in Jedi Fallen Order, you know, you'd be running and grabbing and doing all this other stuff. But in the way they developed the game in VR, it's just not how you walk over, stand still, shooting gallery, walk over, stand still, shooting gallery, battle this, you know, thing. I'm just waggling my arm because I have no real weight or repercussions for what I'm doing. And so, like I said, maybe Half-Life Alyx solves some of those problems some, but it's just, it's interesting to me.
In that there's no melee.
Yeah, that could be a big part of it. But I think locomotion too, like, because it's just not the same. Like I'm constantly moving in games on flat screen games, right? Like constantly moving, strafing, running, zooming around, doing whatever I can to keep moving. Monster Hunter World, perfect example, constantly moving, grappling, you know, doing the whole nine yards. And in most VR experiences, it's not that way. And I imagine
that's my go-to move in Half-Life Alyx is run away. Just like flick, and I get as far away from those things as can. And then I turn around and I fumble and I try to reload my gun and I don't and I die. But I at least gave it a good shot. That Half-Life Alyx is the only VR game where I've had any sense of being able to do movement, especially movement away from a tough situation.
Yeah, maybe I got to put time into it then before I finish this. But I do think it's interesting how like it's just a slower pace of game in VR right now than what I'm used to in like Horizon Zero Dawn. You know, pick your game where you're totally running, rolling, strafing, and doing whatever.
Well,
and
I found
Vader encapsulated that.
Vader to me, and again, I don't mean this in a negative way, Vader Immortal feels to me very much like a next level Disney ride.
Yes. Yeah.
And so with that, you have sort of the mind blowing parts of it where I can't believe this is happening. This never happened before. And then there's also the, oh, but I'm also on rails. Therefore I can only, you know, aim my little, you know, shooter gun at the spot where my little pod is aiming before it spins me around. And I now aim it over there too.
Yes. So it's, yes.
Yep. Which is not bad. It's just different.
It's what it is.
It's what it is. Yeah.
It's an interactive story, really. It's a, you know, And it does that very, very well. And it, and how cool is it to be inside a Star Wars movie?
Yeah, it's my second favorite VR experience, Vader Immortal, only behind Half-Life Alyx.
You gotta play Lone Echo, dude.
I know.
Lone Echo.
I have so many Jeff Cannot. Like, I've been listening to you talk about VR from the beginning. Like, I remember listening to episodes where you were, where it hadn't even come out yet. And you're like, we're almost here, Christian. We're almost here. The future is almost here. Like, you were talking about Lone Echo as your game of the year 4 or 5 years ago. I don't know. I don't know how long years are anymore. I have no idea. Yes, that is one of many Jeff Cannata games that I Star Wars Bridge Crew. I got to play that. I know I have.
Oh, it's so good.
Right. Yeah. There's a list of those.
Well, let me add one potential to the list. In fact, I think this actually is a pretty good one for Christian. It's called Pixel Ripped 1995. It's the sequel to Pixel Ripped 1989, which I never played. I don't know how that one fell through the cracks and I never played it. But it very much is the same kind of thing. Pixel Ripped 1995 is a VR game about a character in 1995 that is inside a Game Boy game and then needs to get out, needs to save the world by making contact with the player of that game and then journeying that player through other retro video games. Same thing with Pixel Ripped 89. 95 is just a little bit further down the chronology of what kinds of games were available at that time. This is a very clever concept, really well executed. It's a VR game where you don't move ever. There are a series of levels where you're just stuck in place, but it handles that very, very smartly. The first thing is it does this really awesome thing where you start the game inside a Game Boy black and white world where everything is 2D, but you're inside it because you're in VR. And just that experience is kind of rad. And then it transitions you into like the 16-bit era. So you're in basically like a Super Nintendo type world. But again, you are the size of a character in that world. Everything is the right size proportional to you around you. But everything's pixel art and 2D. So cool. And it does this awesome thing at the beginning where you look at yourself in the mirror. And you're basically this like Samus Aran character where you've got this, you know, this hand that's a gun and you wear a helmet and you're standing in front of this mirror in 16-bit life size and the mirror like assembles your cool Samus Aran type armor on you. That moment alone is worth the like 15 or 20 bucks that this game it costs. But then what happens is you're this character and you need to make contact with quote the player, right? So you get beamed out of the inside of this game. And all of a sudden you, as the person playing the VR game, are playing as a kid in 1995 who is playing a Super Nintendo type system and is playing basically like this retro sort of a Legend of Zelda type game. And you're sitting in a room, you're sitting in your living room as a kid, like, you know, cross-legged on the floor, looking at a CRT television, and on that television is this 16-bit Legend of Zelda game with that same character, the name Dot in this game in Pixel Ripped, but it's basically Samus Aran. And you're holding a controller in your hands, and you hold the touch controllers like you were holding a SNES controller, and you play the game looking at the virtual TV screen. But what is happening around you is your next door neighbor comes to the window of the room and leans in and starts heckling you. Your mom comes in the front door and says, oh, you stop playing video games. You're playing too many video games. I told you to clean your room. And you're trying to keep playing this video game. And you have this Nerf gun that you can pick up. And your mom's like, I'm telling you, I'm turning that off. And you pick up the Nerf gun and you like shoot the cookie jar off the kitchen table, or you shoot things and make a mess. And she's like, how did this fall over? And she walks over. And so you distract her from turning off your video game so that you can get to the next checkpoint before she comes over and switches it off. Pretty clever stuff, I thought. And I found the whole experience of in that first person view in that virtual reality environment, staring at a TV screen. And then like your dad comes in the front door. It, you hear the door open and your dad's like, hey, well, I'm home. And it was very surreal because it felt like it was really happening. It was crazy cool. But the game does all these wonderful things where you're playing this Zelda game, and then you're playing like a 2D platformer, and then you're playing like a Castlevania game, and then it steps through all the genres, and every time it's, you know, the second level you go to a video store and you're playing at a kiosk, and there's two kiosks. There's one for like the Super Nintendo game and there's one for the Genesis, and you like go back and forth between them. It is clever. It's very linear, not super long, very smart, very fun. Christian, I think you would really dig it with your love of retro.
Yeah, I hovered over this button for a while, but I also knew that I just got internet again and I get to go back to the games I haven't played because I packed up a month ago. But yeah, it looked very intriguing. I saw it on the storefront there, and it seems really, really cool.
I think you'll really like it if you give it a shot. Again, it's really inexpensive. I think it's like 15, 20 bucks. Pixel Ripped 95 is the name of the game. I really found it very charming. All right. We do want to thank our final sponsor, which is Postmates. We live in a Postmates world. Why not have food delivered to you? You know, you can get late night tacos, early morning smoothies. My wife and I use this all the time. We just postmated our dinner because we don't want to go out. We want to stay in nowadays. But that doesn't mean we don't want to get, you know, local food delivery that doesn't actually offer delivery. You know, you can get that now. You can order the kinds of things that you want, and they'll bring them to your house. All you got to do is download the Postmates app on iOS or Android. Find your favorites, get everything you want delivered within the hour. It's awesome. And it's not just burgers and sushi. They actually can pick up everything from Walgreens and 7-Eleven to groceries. It's pretty great. So for a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit. Wow. For your first 7 days. So $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the promo code DLC. That's code DLC for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. All right. That's going to do it for this episode of DLC. We do have parting gifts coming up, so stick around for that. But Rich Grisham, thank you so much for being here. It is always so fun talking to you.
Thank you guys so much. Again, I love the show. I've listened since the beginning. I'm a fan. Being on is a thrill and an honor. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Where can folks keep up with you and the things that you do online?
Well, Out of the Park Developments is the company that I help run. We make Out of the Park Baseball 21, which is a PC baseball strategy game, and it's officially licensed by MLB and MLBPA. It's the 21st edition. Just Google Out of the Park Baseball 21. We've been on TV and podcasts and Twitch and everything. We live stream 7 days a week. So at twitch.tv/OOTP Developments, 7 days a week. I'll run through it real quick. Monday nights, This Week in Perfect Team, weekly showdown. Tuesday nights is a doubleheader with Chicago Hope and the Big Rich Machine. On Wednesday nights, it's Franchise Hockey Manager. On Thursday nights, it's a doubleheader with This Week in Perfect Team and then Perfect Team Playoff Push. On Friday nights, it's GNR Run the Mets. On Saturdays, it's Science Saturdays with Alex with tutorials. And on Sundays, it's the Perfect Team Weekly Prep. 7 days a week, twitch.tv/OOTP Developments, because that's what you have to do these days if you want people to know what's going on in your game. Thank you.
Very, very cool. Very cool. Christian Spicer, what about you? What do you got going on this week?
I have internet again. Do you know how much stuff is on here?
On the internet?
Yeah.
Yeah. My understanding is not that much.
No. Guys,
I go to like 3 websites.
I found so many videos about how the stuff you think is real isn't. I'll send you links. Just give me
pictures of cats.
Just give me. give me an email address for your dad so he can forward it to you. But
I was
it
just going to say, I have an uncle who's already handling that. But thank you.
Yeah, I got you. So let me. Whew, wow, there's a lot here.
You know what? I'm starting to think it was better when you didn't have internet, Christian. Anna was here.
I am streaming to support St. Jude, and I will stream Monster Hunter World Friday nights. You can find this past week's stream on my Twitch, twitch.tv/Christian Spicer. And so this Friday, again, I will be streaming Monster Hunter World again, probably 9 p.m. Pacific time will be the start on Friday night for Monster Hunter World. And then Saturday, I don't have an exact time yet, but I'm streaming with Wombat from Cheap Ass Gamer. We're going to be playing Fortnite. So that's going to be Saturday, May 16th. And you can find the link on pinned to my Twitter to donate directly to St. Jude. My Twitter is at Spicer, S-P-I-C-E-R. All of the money you contribute via that link goes directly to St. Jude. Check with your tax professional and stuff, but tax deductible, it all goes to them. And it helps kids fight and beat cancer. Like, your money makes a real direct difference. And I set a goal of $3,000 this year, and we're over 1,000 already. And I would love to see that number grow from small contributions from many people. It's the idea of, I don't want someone to donate $2,000. Like, I would rather have $2,001 donations. A group of people coming together to do something great, I think is very inspiring. So thank you to everybody.
If you want to donate $2,000, if you can say no.
2,000 people to donate $2,000, if you've got that, it goes to the best cause. So by all means. But thank you to everyone who has donated and to those who have shared and help spread the word. That is very valuable as well. So a sincere thank you. And a shout out to all of our moms as we were recording this before Mother's Day. I love you. And thank you for all of the amazing stuff that you do.
Yeah, our moms, but also any moms that happen to listen to the show. Happy Mother's Day. You're probably hearing this after Mother's Day, but happy Mother's Day to you and to your mom and to any moms in the, you know, reach of my voice.
Yeah, to your mom. Happy Mother's Day to your mom.
Your mom.
Got you, dude.
My mom doesn't listen to the show, but you know, it's okay.
I'm going to make her. I'm going to call her and be like, hey, listen to this.
Listen to this. As for me, I do several other shows that you could check out. I have a show all about movies and TV shows called the Slash Film Cast. We're being creative right now, coming up with interesting things to cover. We did The Lost Boys this week.
So good.
I had never seen it. It was on my list of shame.
Oh my God, you never saw that.
I had somehow gone through my whole life never having seen Lost Boys. And Dan Trachtenberg, big-time Hollywood director Dan Trachtenberg.
Never heard of him.
Was it was one of his big bugaboos with me. Ever since we met, that was one of the things. Is that he couldn't believe that I had never seen Lost Boys. And every few months he texts me and says, why haven't you watched Lost Boys yet? Tonight would be a good night to watch Lost Boys. So we finally got around to doing it as a episode of the Slash Filmcast, and Dan came on and we talked about it with Dan. So it's really fun episode. So check that out at slashfilmcast.com.
Have you listened to the soundtrack?
Soundtrack's great.
People Are Strange cover.
Echo and the Bunnymen, right? Bunnymen who do it.
It's so good. It's so good. Val Kilmer, 24.
Kiefer Sutherland
and Corey Haim.
Yeah, Corey Haim, Corey Feldman, both the Coreys are in it. Man. It's where the Coreys met. And Jason Patrick, who I didn't even know was in that movie for 30 years of my life, didn't know that Jason Patrick was in it. Real good. And Diane Wiest is in it, and some shirtless guy playing the saxophone.
This Dan Trachtenberg sounds like a cool fella.
He is. He's a top notch fella, I tell you. But also other shows that I do. If you're not into movies and TV shows, hey, I got more. If you want to hear me talk about science in a comedic fashion, we just brought back the award-winning comedy science podcast, We Have Concerns. A 2-year hiatus we took, and now we're back. Anthony Carboni and I talking about science and making it funny. You can find that at wehaveconcerns.com or wherever you get podcasts.
And like intentionally funny, not like – you're rolling your eyes as someone tries to describe science.
I mean,
you're like, that's
both.
Not Let's
I'll be honest. There's both of those in our show. I also do a long form Dungeons and Dragons show called The Dungeon Run. It is something I'm very, very proud of. I put a lot of work into it. I come up with the story and the amazing players improvise their way through it. This week's episode, many, many people have reached out and said they think it's the best episode we've ever done. It was really intense, really wild. I highly recommend you checking it out. You can jump in at any point at the Dungeon Run. You don't have to start at the beginning. You can find the Dungeon Run anywhere you get podcasts as an audio podcast by searching for the Dungeon Run. You can watch it on YouTube. All the episodes are archived on YouTube and they're really fun to watch. You can find that on YouTube by searching for The Dungeon Run, or you can watch us live Wednesday nights as we record at caffeine.tv/The Dungeon Run. All right. Let's wrap the show up now with our parting gifts. Hey, give us a suggestion of what to do this week. Give us a parting gift. This is your parting gift. Rich, do you have a suggestion to help people get through their week?
I do. I got a couple of quickies. Number one, I'm a huge music fan, as a lot of folks know. And while I love all kinds of music, rock and roll is my favorite. Give me two guitars, a bass, a piano, drums, and a vocalist, and I'm pretty guaranteed that I'm going to like it. Little Richard passed away today. He is absolutely positively one of the most important people in the history of rock and roll, bar none. I didn't even know who Little Richard was really until I started listening to the Beatles and then listening and discovering the Beatles. I understood how important what he did was to what they did. And anyway, he had a string of songs from like 55 to 58 that when you listen to them today, you're like, okay, that's cool. But if you can even for a half of a second listen to them, understanding what it was like the first time that you heard that, because no music had been made even close to that with the intensity and with the volume and with the, and with just the energy, go check out Long Tall Sally and Tutti Frutti and so many great songs in that run. So, and we all now can listen to any song we want to with a push of a button. So Little Richard, go just spend 15 minutes listening to a few of his songs and you will be blown away. Guaranteed to be blown away.
Two things influential in rock and roll. Little Richard and drugs, like those. Without either one of those things, rock and roll would not be what it is.
Not necessarily in that order, but yes. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Oh, Rich, did you have another one? Did I interrupt you? Did you have two quickies?
You didn't interrupt me real quick. The other one was a book called The Boys in the Boat. It's an amazing book about the kids from Washington who ultimately tried to become the U.S. rowing team for the 1936 Olympics. One of the best books I've ever read in my life, and I just finished it the other day. So that's The Boys in the Boat.
What a perfectly timed suggestion, because my mom loves that book. And it's Mother's Day. So what a perfectly timed suggestion. She loves The Boys in the Boat.
It's also about the 30s, your favorite genre for video games.
Yeah, my favorite fictional time period. Christian Spicer, what is your parting gift?
Hayley Williams, the front person of Paramore, lead singer Paramore, she released a solo album called Pedals for Armor. And I'm not going to lie, I found it challenging. It is not Paramore. It is emotionally dark's not the right word, but you know, Hayley battled some depression, she went through some stuff, and this album feels even more so than Paramore's last release, really digging into it, and it doesn't have the same level of pop or pop punk veneer to it that Paramore does, and it's brilliant. It's truly brilliant. But it took me a couple of listens to feel that way. So if it doesn't immediately click for you, I'd recommend giving it another spin. But it's Hayley Williams' new album, Pedals for Armor.
We got a listener-suggested parting gift. This was sent to us at dlcfeedback@gmail.com. It was sent by Mike Stroud, who says, thanks for continuously putting out a great show with valued guests and positive ideas. I have a suggestion for a parting gift that I think anyone would enjoy and perhaps learn from. I have to admit that I haven't had much of a desire to watch Apple TV Plus, even though I got a free year with my latest iPhone purchase. Perhaps it's because I can really find it Perhaps it's because I can't really find it, or maybe I just haven't heard of any of the shows. However, the Beastie Boys story popped up on my feed recently, and I decided to check it out. I've always enjoyed their music. Yeah, I watched this too. It's so good. And I've known them to be a progressive bunch, as you can see through the evolution of their lyrics. However, after watching the show, I have a much different perspective and respect for them. It's an amazing story of development and maturity that is worth two of your quarantine hours. It also gives you a little glimpse into the music industry. You won't be disappointed. And if you're a fan of the band, you'll also enjoy rediscovering their catalog again in a different light. Also, if you don't have Apple TV Plus, just register for the free trial and check out the Fraggle Rock reboot while you're at it. Keep up the amazing work, Mike. Thank you, Mike. I also watched that. It's fun. It's as a huge Beastie Boys fan my whole life, man, really great, really fun.
Beastie Boys doing Sabotage on Letterman, one of the best YouTube clips ever.
Oh, yeah. Yes, it's so sad that we will never get another new Beastie Boys album, but you know,
but also this, beautiful. Their reason for beautiful. Doing it is, yeah. you know, yeah. is beautiful as well. They're, yeah.
My parting gift, I was going to do something else, but now I kind of want to do what I almost brought up as a news item in the show, but I think this is a great parting gift. You know, a lot of people there's certain video games that the sort of meta life of them is extraordinary. And one for me that I've had my eye on since 2003 when it first came out is Dwarf Fortress. I am just fascinated with Dwarf Fortress. I've literally never played it, but I'm fascinated by what it is. It is self-described as the deepest, most complex simulation video game in the world. And it is this bizarre, constantly evolving, constantly being developed pet project that has a very small but very dedicated audience, because you create this very, very well-realized world. And for the longest time, it was being done with just ASCII graphics. And as a person who grew up with ASCII and ANSI, I was sort of drawn to that anyway. And just it's a wild story. The reason I bring it up as a parting gift is because they're doing a graphical update to it. And the graphical update right now is being done by a different company. It is being done by Kit Fox Games. And Kit Fox Games, as they are updating this game that is extremely deep and dense and unpredictable, because it's basically a huge simulation where anything can happen. Almost anything can happen. It is wild when you read stories about when you read stories about Dwarf Fortress, they read like novels. It's wild. So they are trying to turn these ASCII graphics into actual sort of pixel art, and they're releasing a series of blog posts about it over on the Steam page for Dwarf Fortress, which is just being released on Steam for the first time upcoming. And I highly recommend reading these blog posts, because it's a fascinating look into what that project is like. I can't imagine the complexity and all of the things that they need to do to make it work, to layer on new graphics on a very old, very deep, very rich, very dense game. So check that out. I highly recommend checking it out over on the Steam page for Dwarf Fortress. All right, that's going to do it for this episode of DLC. Thanks again to Rich Grisham and Christian Spice for hanging out with me. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for hanging out with all of us in real time, making the show better. We appreciate you. Thanks to our musical contributors, Patrick L., Sean Madigan, and Zero Star for those awesome bumpers. Thanks to each and every one of you who listened to the show. We are grateful for you. Thanks for sticking with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, think about what you put out into the world. Make it a better place.